Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, going right into the show, July 29th, 2010. And a number of interesting topics tonight. I'll be talking again about, just a second. Why is it that when I start my show, my throat goes into frog mode? I'm not sure. Anyway, there's an incident going on in Michigan right now as we speak. They're trying to evacuate areas of the Kalamazoo River. There's an oil spill there that just began and is actually making national news. CNN is talking about the evacuation, but the problem here is that the officials are simply asking for a cleanup and not asking the oil company, to shut it off. This is another example where vast pollution, the people in the area of this river and the watershed of this river are being asked to move. And this affects Michigan, Wisconsin, and other states in the drainage area of the Kalamazoo River, southwestern Michigan. And it's in a state of emergency. But as this is happening right now, this is absolutely insane. And now this is basically why I produced and am distributing, have it up for sale right now, the pre-water filter. And I'm not going to talk a lot about that, but the point is that even people with a water filter are going to have problems because the type of sludge and pollution we're seeing today is not just your average dirt from a farm field. This is serious pollution. These are chemicals. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the misinformation that's coming out of the Gulf oil spill. And you see I've been familiar with these disinformation groups for a long time. But the problem is that they control both sides of the situation and then make primetime news, and then cause the topic to become a goofy topic. In this case, the pollution coming from rain from the Gulf oil spill. So I'll talk a little bit about that. And also I should mention that I'm not sure if this will happen during the show, but I'm expecting a call regarding the release date for the book. Now, I've been sitting trying to get that release date set up, and in fact the call might come as a timed call. Not this wasn't planned, but it just turns out that the people planning the timing might end up calling during the show tonight. So if that happens, I will say very quickly that I'll be back in just a minute. I'll complete that call and then I'll be back on the air to give you the release date of the new book. And that's something that's people are already buying it. It's already for sale on my website. $16.90 is the price, which includes shipping. The book price is $11.95, so it's a very reasonably priced book. But also tonight I'm going to release a new package, so to speak, where you can get two books for $21.90. And that's less than twice the retail price, that'll include free shipping. So the $11.95 for the book plus $4.95 shipping comes out to $16.90. That's for one book. But for a few dollars more, for $5 more, you would get the second book and free shipping. So at any rate, that'll be up on my webpage tonight. So just trying to, and people are already well into the first printing of buying the book. So, and the reason, of course, for doing that is because you will be in the first printing. And as that first printing, in fact, just to give you a little secret, I was expecting quite a bit more activity on this book release. And so the first printing is five times as large as any of the other first printings. So, and we're already moving through that, so if you want to be in on the first printing, then now would be a good time to buy the book. But also, as I said, I'll be putting up a special price for two books, and that'll be up on the webpage. Or if you use mail order, I'll just say that again, two books. This is the new book, that's coming out probably within a number of days for the release, within about a week maybe, the release show, where the title and the topic and everything will be released. But you can get two of them pre-release, and they will be shipped as soon as the release date occurs, so everything will be shipped out, and you will be in the first shipping if you buy it pre-release. But anyway, two books for $21.90, and that includes shipping. If you want just one book, it's $16.90. You can send that mail order. I'll give the mail order address out in a little while. Anyway, tonight I wanted to talk about birds. And this is a topic because the birds, everybody is familiar with them. You see them in the air, they're flying, they're very visible to everyone. But what if, just what if, a bird's efforts, flight, food, everything the bird did, what if it were taxed? Now let's take an example of, say, a goose that's flying south for the winter. What if it had a 40% tax on its flight? And so all of the energy that went into that goose's flight, 40% of it was taken away. How would that goose fare? How would he do? What if the goose ate food and 40% of the food nutrition was simply not there? It had been taxed away before it ever got to the mouth of the goose. What if then the rest of the flight, there was interest on the goose flight? In other words, for every mile the goose flew, by the time he got to down south, to the Gulf of Mexico or wherever the goose was flying to, and by the way, we are in the middle of summer, and imagine the disaster when the northern birds who go to the Gulf of Mexico and across, many of them to Mexico as far as Mexico, but they rely on the Gulf of Mexico for their sustenance in the fall. Nobody has even talked about the disaster that will occur when these flocks of migratory birds get to the Gulf of Mexico and the disaster that awaits them. But at any rate, back to the bird being taxed. Now, how would the bird fare? Let's take a robin, a small bird that picks worms, and basically say that the robin would pick a worm out of the ground, and someone would come along and take 40% of it away. And then as the robin ate the worm, imagine that the quality of the worm had already been taxed, and only about 20% of what was left was even there. How would that robin do? And of course, the answer is, it's kind of a ridiculous way to look at this, but the answer is that the goose and the robin and any bird would not fare very well, because they need all of their sustenance, they need all of the food that they work for, all of the energy that they expend to fly or to fly south or to migrate has to be used very efficiently. So then let's turn this to the plight of man today, the fact that man is taxed and interest is on every move he makes. All of the products that come through are interest-bearing. So basically, everything that is done today in the name of man is basically very, very much partially there, let's put it that way. So how can man exist? And the answer is, well, he simply can't. The system has to break down. It has to come to a screeching halt at some point. And there's only one way that this can end, and that is with a complete annihilation of the ability of man as individuals, especially as individuals and collectively, to collectively maintain or to prosper. Certainly there can be no prosperous times when this level of drainage is going on collectively and individually. So I just wanted to bring that example because I was thinking about it the other day. I was watching a bird fly, a goose fly, and then I looked at the robin on the ground. I said, you know, what if that bird had 40% of its energy taken away? How would this animal survive, this little animal that depends on basically whatever is put in front of him? And then I also thought there was an interesting analogy that there was a famous person one time, lived a few thousand years ago, and had an expression, and talking to people, the people were worried about how will we maintain, how can we support ourselves. And the comment was, well, look at the birds of the air. They're provided for. They're provided for on a daily basis. They don't want for anything. And it's a good example because people today have lost the faith in the ability of the world to support them. They think that the government has to support them or some loan that they're going to get at in the bank. There have been societies throughout history, it is at least fabled, probably true, that the people of Lemuria, this legendary island that was in the middle of what is now known as the Pacific Ocean, that they sustained themselves simply off the plants and that were growing in the island, the island continent, if you will, and that there was plenty of food for them to eat, and they spent all of their time socializing and advancing cultural aspects of their existence. So there again, they lived somewhat like the birds, but then as an intelligent species, they were able to advance their cultural aspects as opposed to other races who went out and developed a lot of warlike, put a lot of their resources into war, into warfare, into equipment for warfare. And once that starts, of course, then the opposing side has to match, and then there's no end to it. So the entire world today is embroiled in a resource it's just a resource usage for the wrong purposes. And of course, as I said, once it starts, it cannot stop. The only thing that can actually stop it is probably a large-scale disaster where you could imagine the infrastructure of the world were taken out all at the same time by some extraplanetary encounter with a large passing solar system object, whatever. But it might be the best thing for the human race, because without something like that, the human race is going to continue on this unseen objective to have war, eternal use of resources in the maintenance of war, and then protection, the old protection racket. I'm sure most people are familiar with that. There's a lot of movies and TV series based on that where the mob or the gangsters come into a storefront and they try and sell the storefront owner protection. And the owner says, well, I've never had a problem before. I really don't see a need for protection. And they go, well, gee, you know, we'd sure hate to see your place all busted up here and destroyed if you don't buy our protection. So anyway, the owner says, well, you know, I just really decided not to get it because I don't think I need it. Well, that night, gee, isn't it amazing that somebody comes in and busts the place up and beats up the guy, and the next day the protection agents come back and they go, well, we offered you for a very reasonable price protection, and none of this would have happened if you had our protection. So, of course, the guy is forced to start paying extravagant prices for protection. It's literally the old protection racket. And that's what's going on with the governments right now of the world, except they're pitted against each other. So the citizens of the world are in this never-ending game of protection. It's a great racket, I guess, if you can find it. But the point is that the real manner of living has been lost, and the ability to even ask the question about how we should be living has been lost. And unfortunately, many of the talk shows out there try and get people all riled up about certain issues, but then nothing ever happens as a result. And that's the problem. And so the people that have radio shows that talk about the problem endlessly, and this is, you know, but never have a solution, never have a goal, never have a way to resolve the issue, the dilemma, or the human dilemma that's going on in this planet, there's much of the problem. Part of the problem is the problem, because they don't offer a solution. Constant chatter about the problem does not solve the problem. But at any rate, back to the birds of the air, they exist just fine. So the point is, if you took any animal species out there who's just working on a survival basis, trying to make ends meet, so to speak, if you tax them by 40%, 30%, whatever, if you, as they moved, as they went through their daily business of survival, if you created an interest on that and required payment, how could any of these animals survive? And of course, the answer is they could not. It becomes a one-way ticket to slavery. So at any rate, I'm going to branch off into a short discussion about the weather. And as I predicted earlier in the summer when I made my annual hurricane prediction, I said that this would be a very mild hurricane season. And right now the sun is very calm. We had a major, interesting, small belch, I would call it, come out of the sun in the last day or so, a prominence that blasted out of the sun, but it was not Earth-directed, so it pretty much went harmlessly by the wayside. It's those type of flares that if we ever took a direct hit could cause severe damage to the infrastructure of Earth, to the power grid, and that's the type of thing that could, in fact, take Earth down and reduce the human population very quickly, because once, the electricity, say it were out for 2 weeks or a month around major portions of the Earth, everything depends on electricity. So the infrastructure would be gone. Life as we know it would be gone, water availability would be gone, and basic necessities, human necessities, would be gone, because people simply depend on that. And it turns out that the people living the most frugal, simple lifestyle in the countryside would never even basically hear about it, because they don't depend on daily electricity. It's not part of their existence. But, as I said, the sun has been very tranquil lately. A few rapid fluctuations in the solar wind, in the dynamic pressure over the past 24 hours, but nothing serious. So, basically, we get small storms, where the energy comes down and hits the surface of the Earth and drives these small microstorm systems. But, basically, right now, as I talk on this show tonight, the world weather situation is very calm. And that's, as I said earlier in the summer when I made my prediction, there are no major electrical alignments for the summer. We just went through the full moon, and now that has passed. Basically, yeah, we don't have any real electrical conditions that would cause severe storm activity, especially hurricane activity. Now, you look at something like the recent tropical storm that moved through the Gulf of Mexico and up into western Texas, or eastern Texas, and then up into the Ozarks, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, where the toxic levels of chemicals in the rain are going to cause severe damage eventually. If it doesn't cause it on the first trip, it will eventually cause it. And the problem is, I best diverge into this topic right now. Now, last week I talked about, and this is a topic, of course, that's been on the internet, of course, but the disinformation crew always manages to manage both sides of the coin, of the information coin. So what came out first was the disinformation story that oil would be in the rain, and it would rain oil. Well, the oil, if you take the word literally, is the heavy, long hydrocarbon chains that we call oil or tar, crude oil, those type of names. But mixed in with that are the gases, the light hydrocarbon chains, the nitrogen chains that are and so on. That these are the sulfur compounds. These are all mixed in a gaseous form or near gaseous form in the oil. Now these are the ones that become airborne. These are the serious pollutants: the acids, the ammonias, the small chain hydrocarbons like benzene. Those are the ones that are going to lift off the water very quickly, very rapidly, as those minor storm systems move across, or in the case of last week, the low-pressure cell that never developed into a hurricane, but nonetheless would evaporate these chemicals, mix it in the rain, and then as this storm system moves up over land, dumping those chemicals with the rain. So here's the disinformation twist. As I say, they try and control both sides of the equation. They have the first they come out and say, "Oh, it's going to rain oil all over the place." Well, of course, that's not true. That's not what's going to happen. So it's a story that's easily diffused. That's the one that the standard news media takes and blasts all over the place so people can read it and people go, "Oh," and then other people pick that up and repeat it, and thinking that they're going to save the planet. But that's a story that's easily diffused, because then the other side of the disinformation crew comes along, as I call them, the white hats, and they say, "No, well, that isn't true. There won't be any oil in the rain, and everything is good." Well, everything is not good, because in this whole dog and pony show of news manipulation, they don't neither side talks about the real issue, and that is that the small chain chemicals, yes, will be in the rain, and yes, they will destroy plants, and yes, it is an issue that has to be dealt with, and that's why the BP oil spill has to be contained. So the point is that the disinformation crew is in there manipulating both sides of the news. And the end result is that the real news never hits the public's ears, and the public never sees it. So at any rate, let me use another example. Let's take the 2003 Planet X crazy lady talks to alien scenario. You know, and as it turned out on that date, May 15th, 2003, there was a very unusual orange moon, and it would have only been a group like NASA who would have really known about this, because the Planet X disinformation story started as early as about 1995. It just didn't blossom until into the early 2000s, where, as I said, they already had their disinformation plants, and then they had the white hats on the good side coming in and saying, "Well, there's Planet X is a crazy issue. You just have these crazy people that think they talk to aliens, and that's the Planet X people." So you see once again how they manipulate both sides of the equation, manipulate both sides of the topic to control it. And so then the big daytime talk show host could come along and say, "Well, that's just a crazy issue. That's just those crazy people that talk to aliens. They're the only ones that believe in Planet X." And so then you get this mixture of all kinds of misinformation. So when somebody goes to the internet and says, "What's Planet X?" They click on Planet X, they go do a search. Well, then they go to Wikipedia, that's the big disinformation engine there. They go to Google, that throws up all the garbage, so that this poor person that's trying to learn about Planet X, all they get is garbage, complete garbage in the news, or in the web pages that are out there, and the characters that they've set up as front people for this. And then you have the other side, the wannabe white hat astronomers, tier 3, I call them textbook repeaters, because all they know how to do is repeat it, what's in the textbook. And that's what you see. They're out there arguing that there is no Planet X, and anybody that talks about it has to be associated with people that talk to aliens. So this is the type of misinformation, the same quality, the same tactics, the same techniques that are being applied to the oil spill today. And so the control of both sides of the topic. So in the case of oil in the rain, no, you're not going to have necessarily oil coming down in the rain. But what you will have are all of the much smaller chain chemicals, the benzenes, the sulfur compounds, the nitrogen compounds, the ammonias. And those are going to be terribly devastating to plant life. So in Tennessee last week, they already had shown where the plants, especially crops, but this is all the plants, it's not just crops, where the water would bead up after a rain and the little beads of water would sit there on the plant leaves, that it literally burned holes right through the leaves. But, of course, the effort on the disinformation crew, the part of the disinformation crew, is to say that, to twist the story and say, oh, somebody's claiming oil will fall in the rain, and then they say, no, the experts come in and say, no, that can't happen, thusly avoiding the entire issue of the small chain chemicals that are in fact in the rain, that are in fact polluting the land and the crops. And once that chemical gets into the ground, nothing is going to grow there. And these weather systems can come all the way through the central United States up into the Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, the Dakotas. I talked last week about the Dakotas near Minot, North Dakota, where the heavy rain washed oil pollutants and field chemicals used for growing plants or for crops, washed it into the holding pond or a sportsman's club. And it was totally killed off everything in that pond in a matter of a day or so. That's one of the great problems we're facing today, is the heavy pollution, the very unusual thick pollution in water today. So basically the topic of toxic rain, getting a good dose of misinformation, a good dose of basically twisted stories to try and defuse the public. And remember, these are people are professionals. They have PhDs in disinformation. That's the kind of people you're dealing with. Then they have their front people. Those are the people in the background. Then they have their people in the front that are the crazies, what I call the crazies. They're people with, a lot of times they have a name, but you don't even have any idea who they are, what they look like. They're just a name on an internet page, and then Wikipedia or Google picks them up and puts them right at the top. And so when you search on a topic, that's what comes up. And it diffuses 99.9% of all people out there, because they make the story so crazy and goofy that nobody in their right mind would believe it. So it's just a technique they use to try and diffuse real topics. At any rate, I'll just quickly mention the pre-filter that I devised, and with the assistance of a small company working in water filtration. The pre-filter is a large black plastic funnel which sits on top of your water filter. And by the way, these fit any brand of water filter, any of the brands that are have been sold over the past 10 years out there. And it also fits the L5, which is the plastic, high-density polyethylene plastic water filter that I sell in my webpage. It fits that also. So basically, all the stainless steel water filters, various brand names, and, of course, for sure, the Dalton, because that's what many of them copied. Was the Dalton, so they're all of the same dimensions, and then also the plastic large capacity, what I call the large capacity water filter. This pre-filter fits all of them, and basically what you do is you have separator papers, and you put the various powders in, depending on what kind of sludge or chemicals or dirt, whatever you have in the water. And the whole point is you don't want this dirty, filthy water pouring into the top of your nice, clean, stainless steel water filter. That filter is primarily a final filter, and so you want to get all the big stuff out first. One day on my show a number of weeks ago, I talked about the civil defense back in the 1950s understood that dirt, just black dirt, would be able to pull radiation out of the water. And so just filtering water through black dirt would filter radiation out of the water. But there are many other types of chemicals, so basically it's a three-part system, a three-part filtration, a pre-filtration system, and it is you basically take powders, which are relatively inexpensive. You put a layer of one type of powder, then if you're depending on your pollution, you might put a second or even a third layer of the powders together to pre-filter water before it goes into your Dalton or other brand water filter. And so given today's levels of pollution, you need something to get the majority of the bad stuff out first, and then without adding anything to the water, and then you, of course, all of the powders that are used are food and medical grade and used for the purpose of filtering. So the point is, this is something that people need today, and people are recognizing that. So I'll just give a quick summary of this new pre-filter. You can see it on the webpage. It's $179.95, and that includes shipping. Typically, the shipping on this would be $20 to $30, depending on where you live. So the initial offer is $179.95. That includes the water filter, pre-filter canister, and all of the paper separators and other accessories that cover. And also includes, as I said, free shipping, and it'll include the free new book, or the new book, it'll be included for free. And then for $85 additional, you can get an extra bag, so to speak, of both of the types of powders that comes with the unit. So it's always good to have an extra bag of those. So $85, that includes a couple extra bags. But you get a bag of each of these, a 9-pound bag of part A and a 5-pound bag of part B, in with the $179.95 original price of the pre-filter. At any rate, I just think it's something that's necessary these days, and if you're in a state of an emergency, then it's going to be too late to order anything. I got a kick out of a friend of mine I was talking to the other day in another state, and these people are waking up slowly. And anyway, the conversation, I wasn't even mentioning anything. This other person was saying, you know, with what's going on here, a person should really be prepared with food and the one of your water filters. He was talking to me and saying, one of your water filters. But the thing that I thought was comical is people think that, oh, I'll just wait till the disaster occurs and then I'll order one. No, you have to have these things beforehand. You have to have them in place. You have to understand how they work, how to use them. And all of these items you can use on a daily basis. They are things that the pre-filter you probably wouldn't use on a daily basis, but I know of cases where people use well water or surface water, or maybe are at a camp and they use the Dalton water filters there. But they could also do well by using a pre-filter. So these are things that can be used on a daily basis. And then in case of emergency, you already know how to use it. You're familiar with it. And the basic things, of course, you need are food and water. And third thing you need in an emergency is to keep your brains in one piece. I was talking with my friend John Moore one day. We were talking about he was a Green Beret, of course, and the first thing he said was that there were no Arnold Schwarzeneggers or Rambos anywhere in the units he was ever in that he ever saw. He said these were very normal people, but what they did have is they had a very stable mental condition. They were mentally prepared. And so he said that's one of the biggest factors. And, of course, those are the ultimate survival people. They have to be tested rigorously to make sure that they can manage by themselves autonomously on a mission. So the basic idea is that you don't have to be necessarily extremely physically fit, but you have to be mentally fit, and to proceed. And so that's what I've seen too, is amongst people who don't really understand survival, they don't understand that you have to be mentally prepared. You have to be used to using your equipment. It might be dark out. You might not be able to see your equipment. You might have to do things in the middle of the night where there's no light. So you have to be familiar enough with your equipment, have used it on a daily basis, so that you can be prepared in case of dire circumstances. So at any rate, that's why I came up with the pre-filter. Now, I could go on and on. I have pages and pages of water pollution analysis, water pollution cases, where local water pollution systems have become polluted. And here tonight, just as I start pulling up a last few minute details for the show tonight, this comes in from Michigan, right next door. What did they say? 1 million gallons of oil have been spilt into the Kalamazoo River, and nobody is doing anything about it. It's incredible, but it looks like it's becoming very clear, if it isn't already to you, that these are basically like attacks, warfare attacks on the American public. It's not like bombs are dropping, but it has the same effect. If you pollute somebody's water and food, and the ability to get water to, say, raise plants or get water to put into the city water system, you have a big problem. And so the control of water, the pollution of water, and then the ineptitude of governments, is it ineptitude, or are they simply being told not to clean these up? The end effect is the same, that you do not have clean water. And the only way you're going to have clean water is with your own ability to filter water, to have your own food. And this brings up another point. I know a lot of people out there have seeds. They are ready to have a garden, and they believe that in a case of emergency, they're going to have a garden. And from all of the people I talk to who are experts in the field, chances are, if there's a real emergency of some kind, you are not going to have a garden. You're not going to have time to grow things. You might have the ability to grow sprouts. And so you would take the seeds that you have, grow sprouts, and eat those. But it might be a long time until you can actually have a garden and produce food of your own. So that's a major consideration, and it's something that took me a while to understand. And if you had this wonderful, big, healthy garden, and everybody else was destitute, just imagine what's going to happen to your garden, not to mention what the animals might do. So you'd have, unless you have the ability to sit up 24/7 and watch and monitor your garden, you're probably not going to have a successful garden. Just a little bit of advice there. I was telling a friend the other day, I was on a radio show back in the early Planet X days, back in the early 2000s, and I don't remember what show it was, but they had call-ins, so the people were calling in, and this little old lady called in, and she was very concerned that, you know, she was trying to become prepared. And I thought, well, that's very good, ma'am. You know, you're getting prepared. And she said, yes, I have my generator, and I have the fuel stored to last for a while. And she was telling me some of the other things that she did to become prepared, and she wanted to know if that would be enough, and if Planet X came, or if there were other events like that, celestial events. And I had been talking about high winds and storms and bad weather and stuff like those type of topics. So anyway, she asked me on the air if I thought she was sufficiently prepared. And I said, well, if from accounts of the ancients, if this came true, what the ancients talk about, the severe weather and winds, etc., I said, If you took your seed supply, put them in plastic bags, and duct taped them around your leg or something around your torso, and that's all you had when the dust cleared and when the smoke cleared, so to speak, if that's all you were left with, I said, you would be one of the lucky ones. And this poor little old lady, I was trying to be frank and honest, all of a sudden she goes, oh dear, and she hung up the phone. But the idea is that people think if they go out and they have their generator, they have fuel, if they have seeds to plant a garden, and if they have food supply stored, and they have so many things, that they're going to be okay. And the reality of the situation is that it's very difficult to say. It's very difficult to say who's going to be in a good place, who's going to have the right place. I know people have moved to remote places in hopes that they're going to be in a place where none of the action is, so to speak, that they're going to live life somewhat normally. And of course, nobody expects that it's going to be exactly the same, but hopefully live a life, just a normal life, have a garden, raise your own food, homeschool the kids, and everything will be fine. Well, that's a good thought, and that works well when our culture is still somewhat marginally moving along. But in the case of, say, an infrastructure disaster, say a solar flare hits Earth and takes out the infrastructure, the electrical infrastructure. And by the way, how would you make more parts to put back in the infrastructure, the electrical infrastructure, if electricity is gone? It's self-supporting, so to speak. So the point is that being prepared means many, many things, but chances are you're not going to have a garden. Chances are the water will be polluted. Chances are you're not going to be able to go anyplace. Chances are you're not going to be able to get any new supplies. And chances are you're only going to have the food that you have on hand at the time. That there is not going to be some magical source of food or a semi-truck coming up to your house and dropping off your government-supported food. No, is not going to happen. So at any rate, I'll just quickly give out the mail order address. I forgot to do that, and I always forget too. So very quickly, a mail order address is JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, 55392. Once again, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And just the items that people might want, $16.90 for one book. That's the new book, including shipping. And we'll be shipping those fairly soon, by the way. Or two books for $21.90, and that includes the two books and free shipping. Or the new pre-water filter, $179.95 for the pre-filter, and that includes the filter hardware. That includes the black funnel, it is called, that goes on the top of the water filter, the 50 of the paper separators, the chemical paper separators, and then nine pounds of part A powder, 5 pounds of part B powder, and that is for $179.95, and then $85 additional, which is recommended, an extra bag of 9 pounds of part A and an extra bag of 5 pounds of part B filter powder. That's it. So anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit once again about oil and the source of oil. I talked about this last week, but there's some topics I didn't quite have enough time to cover. Last week I talked about the fact that oil could not possibly have come from fern forests. And for example, let me give it, and the same with coal, that coal, when you take a piece of coal, I don't know how many people out there have ever held coal in their hands, but if you take coal, it comes dug out of a coal bed, it's typically smashed up leaves, and these are all layered, of course, And the only way that this could have happened is if the sea at one time came across a large expanse of land, a tidal wave, so to speak, took all of the plant life and dumped it into a region. And then that, at the same time, there would have been, because this is the tidal wave was caused by a passing large comet nucleus, then the oil comes raining in and soaks the coal, the plant life there, and that's where the toxic, very toxic chemicals come from in coal. So that's another rather interesting issue. One of the dichotomies or contradictions of coal is that some coal is what you call dry. It does not have a lot of chemical, it doesn't have a lot of chemical in it, whereas some coal is extremely toxic. It has a great many different, very toxic chemicals, and so when it burns very dirty, very filthy, and it's the chemicals have to be scrubbed off, otherwise the amount of pollution is incredible from burning coal. But just to give a modern example of this type of tidal wave activity that caused a big pile-up, so to speak, of vegetative material, when the Sumatra tsunami of a number of years ago, a couple years ago, it caused a tsunami that took out half the coast of India, and also continued on, and in the line of fire, so to speak, was the island state country of Madagascar on the eastern coast. So when that tidal wave from the Sumatra tsunami, when that came rolling into Madagascar, it took miles and miles of vegetation and pushed it back, because Madagascar is a tropical island. It took that material, that plant life, and pushed it far inland and dumped it into big piles, which will someday dry out and become coal. The water will be compressed out of it, and it will become a dry coal material in, you know, maybe thousands of years. But that's an excellent example. That's a living example of how coal beds form. And of course, as I said, if there were, the tidal wave were due to a large passing comet nucleus, then at the same time you would get the influx of oil, the hydrocarbons from the carbon from the comet tail, that we would be, we as Earth or any other planet for that matter would be passing through, would get this influx of oil, and therefore saturate the coal with oil, and then along comes another possibly era where dirt and materials piles up on top of the coal bed. Interestingly enough, Ignatius Donnelly was the lieutenant governor of Minnesota back in the 1800s, near the Civil War era, and he was a naturalist, so he collected information. And a couple observations. He wrote The Antediluvian World and talked about, basically as a naturalist, when they came through the Midwest and the West, they saw evidence of great flood everywhere. So there was no question in these people's minds that there had been a massive flood, and of course this had been around the world. So it was very much believed in and understood by these first naturalists that came across the United States. But as Velikovsky pointed out, by the year 1900, all of the evidence of these natural disasters, of the Great Flood, all of it had been wiped out by man and his quest to populate the western states of the United States. And so in his book, The Antediluvian World, Ignatius Donnelly talks about all of the evidence for the Great Flood. And of course, the antediluvian world means the world after the flood. And he talks about the world before the flood. And so but the dividing point is the Great Flood. He came from an area in Pennsylvania. That's where he was born and raised, in the coal fields of Pennsylvania. So when they dug down to get the coal, it came in layers. And so they dig through a layer of coal, And then there'd be a layer of sand and gravel on top of that, and then another layer of coal. So what he realized, that whatever was causing these coal beds, it was periodic. It was something that happened regularly. So those people knew, but they didn't understand that comets were the plasma discharge of the solar capacitor. They didn't understand about the solar wind. They didn't understand any of this. They really didn't have a good grasp of the physical world around them, let alone outer space and the activities, although once again it was very well understood throughout history that comets would be very active, electrical lighting up of the comets. They looked like a neon light up in the sky. These are the more active comets that actually have enough electricity pouring through them that they light up literally like a light bulb. And I've been, just a side note, I've been to conferences, international science conferences, where this topic comes up. And one of the main things for standard astronomy is to deny that comets could have that level of activity. So that they would actually light up, that the and of course what they believe and what a want to talk about is that the light of a comet is simply reflected light from the sun. And then all of a sudden comets have X-rays. Comets have a much higher energy, a good deal of ultraviolet light. So where does this high energy light come from in great abundance when in fact the sun, the solar light does not have the same amount of energy? It's just as with everything in standard science, their theories don't add up if you look at the numbers. There's not enough energy in the solar light that's coming out of the sun to account for the amount of radiation you're seeing coming out of the comet tail, so something else has to be happening. Some other source of energy has to be contributing to the light you're seeing from a comet. At any rate, these are just observations that as you build them up, you start to see that the standard science stories simply do not make sense. They could not possibly be true. Then you see that NASA has sent spacecraft out to take close-up view, photographs, etc. of comet nuclei, expecting to see a white snowball-looking type of object, and the nuclei of comets turn out to be the hottest, darkest objects sometimes in the solar system. So they have to maintain that facade of bad science, that somehow the dirty snowball comet model is true. And so every article you see, whether it's on any of the standard science outlets, Discovery, History Channel, Space Weather, or any of the other ones that might mention comets, they always have to say those icy wanderers, as if, you know, as if, are they trying to convince themselves or the audience? That's what I always ask. I have to kind of chuckle because it's almost like they're trying to convince themselves more than they're trying to convince you, because, if they repeat it enough, then it's true. If they hide their head in the sand and repeat dirty snowball comet model enough times, then they can pretend it's true. They can hide data, they can pretend the data simply doesn't exist. But how can you, like Comet Borealy is a great example. When they got to Comet Borealy, they actually had a spectrometer on board that could determine the composition of the surface material of Comet Borealy. It was, guess what? Oil and tar, hydrocarbons, long chain hydrocarbons baked on the comet nucleus. Not a drop of water, not a drop of ice, and no water vapor coming off the nucleus to form the tail that they knew was there. So how could a nucleus of a comet that's not producing any water vapor still be considered some kind of relative to a dirty snowball nucleus? It's just absolutely absurd. Just another example of misinformation. When the deep space impact, like refrigerator-sized impactor, collided with Comet Tempel 1 with the nucleus, nothing but dust came off the comet nucleus. But here was the disinformation twist. There were observing telescopes from Earth who claimed that about the time of the impact, they saw an increase in water activity in the tail. Therefore, that's what they used to say, water came out of the nucleus of the comet when the impactor hit. But the direct photos right there, ground zero, right there at the nucleus of Comet Tempel 1, those cameras did not see any water come out of that nucleus. But you have to see how the NASA twists the story, twists the data, to try and pretend that that story is true. And you just have to realize there's a bigger motivation for this. There's a tremendous motivation for promoting bad science to the public. It's just an issue that the public has to understand, and that's why I continually talk about these topics on my radio show, because this is the only place you're going to hear about this. You're not going to see it on CNN. You're certainly not going to hear it on the evening news, and you're certainly not going to hear it on the History Channel or the Discover Channel, which is, these are all, National Geographic, what are some of the other ones? The glossy magazines that appear at the newsstand, whether it's astronomy or Sky and Telescope or any of these, they have to repeat these bad science topics or theories to make this facade that everybody out there is in agreement. And then they come along with the misinformation stories, like the crazy lady that talks to Planet X, so they can point at that and, that's just those crazy people that think about Planet X. It's not any of us normal people, is it? All of the innuendos that occur in that area of bad science, bad news reporting, and all of it for one purpose, to keep the public dumb and stupid. And they do a pretty good job of it, I gotta admit it. I hate to say it, but there's a lot of people that I know that still have never picked up on the total picture. And that's part of disinformation. If you can fool the people most of the time, or fool even some of the smarter ones 50% of the time, then you're doing quite well. So at any rate, I'm running out of time. I'll just give my ending. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night. I'll give the mail order address just one more time. JMCC. P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. And once again, the water filter, pre-filter, $179.95. And then $85 for the additional extra 9-pound bag Part A and 5-pound bag of Part B. Those are the powders that you put in the water filter. And good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week, and I will be announcing the book release date on my webpage and next week.